Thanks for listening to ShopTalkShow.com. Two lovely sponsors for you, Lynda.com. You know they're the biggest learning resource there is on the web. Go to lynda.com/shoptalk for a 10-day free trial. They made it a little longer these days, and if you go and use that URL, the buttons that normally, you know, where you have to click and sign up and, like, pay for it to join, they turn into, like, little free trial buttons. So if you go to lynda.com/shoptalk, you sign up for your 10-day free trial, which is awesome. And we don't have a second sponsor, so that second sponsor is CodePen, dang it. CodePen.io. I'm going to tell you about cool features of it. And we have a big launch coming the day that if you're listening to this over the podcast, it's probably today. So check out CodePen.io for that. And I don't know. Let's kick things off. How about that?
You're listening to another episode of the Shop Talk Show, a podcast all about front-end web design and development, among other things, Christmas trees. What kind of fir or evergreen tree do you appreciate?
I literally have no idea what you're going to say after this thing plays. It's always a surprise.
I had these big dreams to do a secret or serial-style introduction, like, this week on Chop Talk.
Did you listen to that parody or whatever? He's like, and he had a walkie-talkie. It's like a cell phone with more buttons.
It's so great. Like he calls his friend or he calls strangers. He's like, where were you on January 13th? 1999.
We have anyway, with I'm us David Sophie Shepherd. Hi, Sophie.
Hi.
Sorry. I just moved along because we heard Sophie chuckle and I didn't want people to be confused about
it. I realized that as soon as I laughed and I thought, oh God, I've blown it already.
blew my cover.
Oh, it's lovely. It's lovely to have you, Sophie. Sophie is Austin, Texas, and so is Dave. So they share that thing.
I think we're like 1 mile apart.
Is that maybe right? Even right less.
Maybe even less, yeah. So...
We're same general neighborhood message board.
Yeah. Which, by the way,
you see the same lost dog posters.
Yeah. Over did you see the black cat with white spots? Is he still?
I got one recently, and it said that their cat was missing, and it's 33 pounds, and its face is the size of a grapefruit.
That's great.
And I googled cat size, and it's like 4 times a normal cat.
Wow, that's wild.
I used to love, before they became cliche, those like, have you seen this dog? Because it's awesome. You know, those, it's probably chomping expensive food in the backyard of my awesome house right now. You know, it's just like a show-off poster of their dog.
With little pull tabs for phone numbers.
Yeah, that's like that just says, like, I agree. Anyway, so and then I know Sheppy.
Sheppy,
she's my Sophie is my Twitter. You should definitely follow Soph Shepherd on Twitter. Really knows the tone to bring things home. But anyway, I Happy Cog is a thing too. People know Sophie because she's an incredibly good designer and works at Happy Cog and stuff. Right? Well, tell us your miniature life story.
Yeah, that's about it. I've been at Happy Cog for 3 years now, and live in Austin. I stole from Dave the Dribble meetup, so we know each other through that.
Oh, that's right. ATX Dribble.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's like, designer types hang out and meet up. And honestly, it was our inspiration for... having a CodePen meetup there too, because it was kind of like, wow, there's a lot of people that like to go to these things in Austin, and it's such a cool town.
A lot of people who
for.
Like to drink beer.
Yeah.
Free beer. Dude, it's not really a hard sell.
No. Who did? And then, yeah, anyway, so thanks for being a good role model.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
So, Sophie, you're a champ. I'd like to publicly thank you because I was managing the Dribbble meetup and doing a terrible job. And you were like, hey, how about I take care of that for you? And yeah, it's still excellent. So
I think
you're
good
at it.
We're lucky that Austin is awesome and it's full of a bunch of super nice designer developer types.
Yeah.
I think it's a good culture. It's got the culture.
And there's good spaces to have these things too.
Yeah, it's like every time we have one, there's a new bar option. I'm starting to think about South By. And there are so many new places since last South By.
Because Dribbble's willing to go big for the South By one too, right? Or they have traditionally?
Yeah, last year was crazy. It was, I think, like 400 or 500 people. this year, we're still very early, not really sure what's going to happen. So
gosh. We'll see. I could give away like golden nuggets and I couldn't get 500 people to show up. Oh, someday. Anyway, let's see. Austin, what else do you do? There's some girl develop it in there. Are you still active with that?
Yep. Teach intro to SAS and
really?
Yep.
That's awesome.
And intro to responsive web design. I just taught a Photoshop class, which was interesting.
Badass. Were they like, should we use Sketch or Photoshop?
It was so interesting because it was a lot of people who were super beginners, like, and the questions they asked were so relevant to what's happening now in the web. It was people who hadn't really used Photoshop at all. And then they were like, so should we use vector images? And I'm like, oh God, where do I start? Mm. And they were asking about how to save images for different devices. And it was just like,
wow,
it's a whole nother class.
Have you used extract assets in Photoshop? I'm new to it, but it's kind of useful, actually.
I have not used it.
Yeah, cool.
Is that the thing that you can just like turn on and it saves them out for you?
Kinda. I think the Photoshop team would not be surprised that you haven't used it. But it's kind of like how you name your layers. Like you could name a layer that's a shape layer, like, you know, Sophie.svg, and then go to File, Extract Assets, which is right kind of by Save for Web. And then it'll just kind of know that you want that one to be SVG, or you
That's
can
cool.
choose it to be SVG, and it will be cropped to the edges of that shape, which is the really
That's worth
valuable
it just
part.
For, like, icons.
Yeah, totally. You could. Yeah. You wouldn't need multiple artboards. Then you just put them wherever you want. Yeah, it's pretty cool. Anyway, that's a total aside. But you teach beginners that stuff in GDI.
Yep.
Yeah, cool. And I just kind of I like that you're like totally in the trenches with design work. You like work with real clients on real websites.
I do.
Yeah, big time. Cool. SophieShepherd.com is the place. So Shepherd on Twitter. This is our guest. If you're just joining us, I feel like we should do that more on the radio where we like remind people where we are in the show. What's going
like
on?
Like coming That's back good. From a commercial break.
Yeah.
Just do a quick
if
recap.
You're just joining us, we're talking with Sophie Shepherd in studio today.
And speaking of being, sorry, I should have let that play out, Dave. Sorry.
No. Nope,
Sometimes
nope,
I like to
nope.
keep things moving on. And then some people are like, stop cutting off Dave. Sorry about
Dave,
that. I do that
Dave
to you. I'm
sorry.
Dave
was working on a really good fart joke right there, and he just steamrolled him.
I have this. I'm always torn between trying to like move the show
let's
on
keep
and
going.
Keeping you up.
Push,
push.
Come on, yeah. come on. We gotta go. I have a sound effect for that. Hold on.
I was gonna ask Sophie about prototyping and process and stuff because that's always something that like comes up in real world stuff. And you have a blog post kind of about how you were like trying to. You're like then when you scroll down, like this thing is gonna move in and this thing will move over here, and like even people on your own team of super intelligent individuals are staring at you. And then you're like, imagine having that same kind of meeting with a client. They're just gonna be like, I have no idea what you're saying. So you were trying to, you invented the movement prototype. Or that brought that concept.
I didn't invent it, that's for sure. But it's a constant challenge to figure out what we need to make to communicate something to someone. And there's so many variables that I can't even say like what the right way to do it is.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, every single project I do, it's something different. So we'll do sometimes like full HTML prototypes with real code, fully responsive. And that's right for some clients, and for other clients, they're like, where's the design? Or, you know, like, oh, this looks good, ship it. Like, I love black and white websites. It's tough, and I think it's almost like a psychological thing. You need to learn how clients respond to things, and learn, like, some clients need a lot of hand holding, and you really need to show them exactly how something's going to look. Other ones can just look at a prototype or even a rough sketch and understand how that's going to get translated. So I don't think there's a right way or a wrong way to do it. I've written a couple posts about, like, the millions of different ways we do a lot of, like, micro deliveries. So it's not necessarily a full prototype that's all done. But looking at specific pieces that we think need extra definition.
It's all very interesting to me. There's what's good for them, which is probably the most important thing, right? You don't want to confuse them. You want to communicate things clearly about what you're doing. But you also, isn't there some degree of, like, what's best for us too? Like, if we start with a responsive prototype, doesn't that make it easier to ultimately deliver the final thing? Because we've done a bunch of work that we can recycle.
Yeah, I think, so there's the variable of, like, client understanding, and then there's the variable of how much time do we have, both in terms of, like, we have 2 days to do this, and then also budget. We don't want to spend, like, 80% of the budget up front building a really fancy prototype. And then also, how much can we reuse? So we found that prototypes usually work best if we do them really kind of quick and dirty and don't reuse the code. Because things change a lot. So we use frameworks a lot for those. But then sometimes it's much faster. And it also depends on, like, the skill set of the designer doing it. So sometimes
I always find that fascinating, that, like, you might build something with HTML, CSS, and JavaScript, show it to them, have it be part of that process, but know the entire time that you're doing that's just going to get thrown away.
Yeah, I did that for this movement prototype. It was like I just chopped up the PSD into the layers that move. So, like, there was no real text or anything. Probably to the client, it was like, okay, this is a finished website. This looks great, and it has animation. But in the long run, we could never ship that.
Yeah.
So now you're not, you have the kind of opposite problem you would from, like, a sketch where they don't see enough fidelity. Now they've kind of seen too much fidelity, and they're like, why can't that ship? And you're like, well, it's not.
It looks better than it is.
I wonder if there's some place in this for, like, animated GIFs or little movie files, you know?
Yeah, I mean, we've done that too. Like, I worked with a designer who was, you know, I feel more comfortable in CSS and putting things together in the browser. He felt more comfortable in After Effects. So he made a video of how things would transition.
Yeah, that's cool. Whatever your tool, right?
Yeah, exactly. I like CSS because you can use the mouse in a more realistic way. Like, scroll and understand how it's actually going to work rather than watching someone else do it via video.
I guess it's one-to-one, like, the scale is correct too, right? Like, it's that's
for
the size
one there. Width, yeah, it's not responsive, but
yeah, for at least one, yeah.
Where do you stand on if you don't use Framer
for
Quartz Composer to do prototypes, you are a dinosaur. Where do you stand on that?
In the past, I guess.
Okay. You're pro dinosaur.
I'm pro dinosaur. Okay. No, I'm not. I think with all of this stuff, it's whatever you feel best in and whatever's fastest.
Yeah. It's so it's interesting when people try to prescribe. It's kind of, it's like fight for your life. Just get something out there. It doesn't really matter, but it has to just be whatever, a step above paper and
not even. I have, like, probably for each project we'll sketch something and send it to a client on paper.
But, you know, we work that way a lot, but we realize not everyone does it. But yeah,
I think long as you're not sending it over and, like, this is your website, do you like it?
Yeah.
Then in some ways I think clients appreciate it because they like feeling part of the process. Like, I think that the old, like, advertising model where you present this huge thing at the end and it's done and they can't change it kind of scares a lot of people. So I think if you show them really early low fidelity stuff, it helps them feel more involved.
Legit.
It's good. It's Cool. Awesome. Well, we should move on. Under right,
our,
Chris?
Yeah, under our errors and omissions, I think somebody on Twitter was like, oh, I think we maybe inadvertently dissed one of their projects that we shouldn't
That's
have.
That's my fault. Slick Carousel reached out to us and was like, janky? Really? I think, which is totally, I think we weren't explaining it very well. I think my, it's actually really good. It's being used on ThinkGeek and stuff like that, like their carousel and stuff like that. So it's a really good, JavaScript component, but my focus was completely on like resizing and just, it does that a little bit different, you know, and resizing can be like a super edge case, but then, you know, at the same time, I'm also of the mindset, like if a user does resize the browser, they shouldn't feel like, you know, the browser is like, you know, hitting a maximum frame rate. You know what I'm saying? Like, remember when you used to like resize a Flash site by accident and you're like, oh God, it's going to crash. It's going to crash. Like you hear your fans turn on. That's kind of what I have like stigma from all that. But anyway,
there should be a feeling good for that we should name, you know. I feel like there's all these little tech feelings that you can get that should be better named, like the oh my God, it's going to crash, or the
you're feeling Rupert-y, I think. You know, I was feeling very Rupert-y, like, oh God, it janked. And
there's still the one that I feel like never had a great name. That's the, like, I know that there's something important on my clipboard, but I can't remember what it is. So you like have to open a text file to paste it just so that it's somewhere.
Or like, I'm so afraid I'm just gonna tweet passwords from one password. I'm like 90% certain I will do that at some point in my life.
I remember I made a slider one time too, and it ended up getting used at pieway.com, which is that like the fast version of PF Chang's or whatever, and I was totally stoked.
There's a place called Pieway.
P-E-I.
Or Payway.
Is it Payway? Oh, I'm the worst.
I was picturing like a freeway with pies on it.
Like a little Homer Simpson thought bubble. Like,
yeah. Pieway.
Payway. How do you really say it?
I have no idea.
Okay.
Payway.
That sounds more industrial. Anyway, remember in the back we made fun of the Apple website for having a hamburger menu, which I always try to avoid saying because I hate that term. But the three-line menu, but only they use two lines, you know? And two people wrote in. One said that maybe they do that because it's like easier and more like understandable when it translates into an X. You don't have to like slide the third one away with like gratuitous designer.
Casually put it out of the way.
Yeah. Maybe it's because when their menu gets revealed, it's like horizontal instead of stacked on top of each other, like the three line kind of implies.
Both decent theories. Then shouldn't they have like two lines next to each other?
Probably, yeah. They should
like
turn
two
it sideways.
Hot dogs.
You know, it's so people. Can I go out on a thing? People are very like, you know, there's all these blog posts like from Apple and stuff out, like menus are a hack and blah blah blah, and people tweet them and they're like, oh yeah, but like if you use Yosemite, there's like tons of hamburgers. Like Safari has one, the Finder is basically a hamburger menu, if you like any, and but they use like a different icon, so therefore it's okay. I don't know, I'm just like you can like super hate, but like, you know, don't blog unless you've cleaned your house of hamburgers. In my IMHO.
Join me in my exasperation club of talking about lined menu icons.
I like the term clean your house of hamburgers. Like, those people with hamburgers everywhere.
Yeah. It's like, you got hamburgers in your house, man.
They stink.
Quit calling yourself a vegan.
They're everywhere.
You think you're gone, and then you get on the ladder and look at the top of the credenza, and there's a couple up there yet.
Single patties.
Yeah. Come on. You're not a vegan. Oh, all right. Hey, everybody, should we get into the Q&A?
Let's do one question.
All right, let's do one question. We'll do James Searson. Sears like the store with Sun. Thank you. I have spent a lot of time on designing the actual structure and layout of my portfolio website recently. What I realized yesterday was that when it comes to choosing the right fonts for your site, things can get a little tricky. For the past few days, I've been unable to come up with a satisfying selection via Typekit. There are so many choices. I'd love to know what your thought process is when it comes to designing this part of your design. Thanks.
He's trying to pick out a font for a site, went to Typekit, tried them all, couldn't find one he liked. I can feel you though, James, you know, like it does kind of feel like, I don't know what I'm doing, or like, it seems like there's all, or like you even pick one that like looks nice when you look at like, you know, the quick brown fox, whatever. And then you try it on your site and you're like, nah. Anyway, what do you, as a designer? So
I think the, what was his name? Sears?
James.
James Searson.
I think the mistake maybe is doing the layout first and then trying to fit fonts into that. I like to separate. Yeah. I like to separate them because different fonts fall differently. So like if you have a certain width of a column and use one versus another, they're going to look really different. So I think that it's easier to choose fonts first and then build a layout based on those and to start thinking of your grid after, you know, getting an idea for pacing and line length and sizing of stuff, and then do the layout. It's really difficult to do a layout and figure that out and then just apply fonts to it.
Yeah. So, I mean, but what if you already did the layout? Should he throw it away and pick a font and then redo it, you think?
No, but I would pick a font separately, and then if it doesn't look good in your layout, adjust the layout. Don't keep trying new fonts.
Oh, there you go. So maybe it's the layout, not the font, James. Or
exactly.
It is the case. That's good.
One thing you could do is like also only have like six fonts you use, which may be kind of boring.
Like in life?
It's like, yeah, like or like eight faces, right? Like that magazine by Elliot J. Stock.
Yeah.
It's just like, what are the eight typefaces you use? Like, and why? Like, figure those out and then just only use those for a while. I don't know. Then you have to make less decisions in life. Think about it. Everything will look the same, but, you know, think about it. That's what I would say. I only use one font, Open Sans from Google.
I think that's a good suggestion because then you can start to understand how they work and how they look at different sizes. It's always a challenge to work with a new one for the first time.
Yeah, there's some technical stuff to it, but then there's also some, you know, some hashtag personal branding going on with it too, and that it's just like, this is mine. You feel some sense of ownership over it, right? Like, this is when I do stuff, it looks like this, and I like
think that.
That
probably makes it so difficult though, because then you have existential font crisis.
Yeah,
you're like, is
you're
this me?
At millions
is this
of fonts.
Too fun? Is this not professional enough?
Is this too fun? I would go to sleep thinking about that for sure. I'm about to make a very bold typographic choice myself, and I probably am not ready to not ready to say what it is here. But I'll talk with you guys after the show about it because I feel like I'm going to do it. And I
what
think
is
a
it,
lot
Chris?
Of,
my.
What is it?
It's just. Well, I guess
friends.
I can just say it. It doesn't really matter. I need to redesign some sections of CSS Tricks, right? Because I need to fit something new into the navigation, and I need to deal with some performance things. And I'm thinking, like, you know what? I'm a little sick of too many fonts. And I was like, I use whiskey.app a lot to write in Markdown. It has a nice code font that the whole thing is in. I write in WordPress a lot. It uses a monospace font in it. I use, I've been seeing it more and more in other, like, have you seen Elo.com or whatever? They just use monospace all over it. It looks a little weird, right? But monospace is all over my life. And on CSS Tricks, it's not a long form writing website anyway. It's like a lot of like little bits of sentences intermixed with code. So I'm thinking, I'm just going to go monospace the whole day. Damn thing. Pick one font, a really small source code pro from Adobe, and just the paragraphs, everything. Just do it. Just the whole damn thing. There's only one font that does. Performance-wise, it makes sense. I feel like it's pretty readable still. I just feel like people are going to be like, monospace fonts are not for reading, you know?
You can test it out and don't tell anyone and then just see how people respond.
Yeah, just push it out one day and just see what it's like. Yeah, I probably will. I'm just worried that there's going to be too much backlash and that I don't have the guts to stick with it. But I
go with your heart, Chris.
Okay. I think it looks cool. I already have
that. That's for James Searson, too. Follow your heart.
Follow your heart. In terms of James Searson, he could also – I ask people who are smarter than me and who like type more than me for recommendations, pairings, if you will. Just like how you'd ask your friend, like, hey, I'm getting into archery. What's a cool bow and arrow set or something? Or, hey, I'm getting into beer. What's a good IPA? You just ask your friends who know about fonts what they should get or what they would recommend for you.
Certainly there's one out there.
Generally, it's always good to do themed fonts. So, like, if you're doing a cat website, always have fonts with cats on them.
Okay.
Or beer.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, good. And
really putting a point on it, making these some action items.
And three L's would, like, use OpenType to, like, be, like, scratch marks? Is that how that works?
Yeah.
For all the words with three L's in a row.
That's like a ligature, no.
Yeah, an OpenType feature, so... Cat scratch.
Speaking of learning about typography, our sponsor this week is
nailed it.
Lynda, lynda.com. And the URL that you should go to is lynda.com/shoptalk. As I said at the top of the show, when you do that, the little yellow buttons that normally say, let's see, what do they normally say? They say like sign up or whatever. They turn into say try it free, the little programming magic, because you get 10 days free if you sign up through this URL, meaning that you can, I don't know, do a bunch of... Oh, my God. Look at how many hamburgers they use in the bottom. A lot. See, I just feel like it's fine. Just use them. Anyway, there's 100,000 video courses on lynda.com. Wrap your mind around that. You couldn't watch them all if you wanted to. If you started right now and just hit play on all of them, you couldn't get through them. Now, you have to pick and choose. You have to do something like use their search bar and type typography into it and find what they have. Oh, my God, there's a whole bunch of them. Of course there are, because there's so many stuff on lynda.com. And it's not just like, oh, there's so much stuff. They'll have anybody do a course, you know? Like, they find authors that are the perfect author for the course. They fly them out. They, you know, they work with them for months on creating the, because I know, because I've done this, what the course is going to be like. And you have to, you know, make a table of contents and then flesh it out and plan every single video. Then they fly you out and record it in this little super soundproof, cool booth and stuff. These are really well done courses, right? There's a lot of courses, but they're also all good. So, lynda.com/shoptalk. Plenty of stuff on typography and all kinds of more topics about all the stuff we talk about on shoptalkshow.com. Let's do another question.
All right. Well, I think we have an audio question here. Oh, my goodness. Let's just do another words question.
Well,
we'll go back to the audio.
Okay.
iOS 8 isn't super fast on this little iPad. Here we go. Relly Curdy writes in, is there a reason not to start blogging? I have been doing web design and development for a while now and wondering whether I should start blogging. The main reason being that I would learn a lot. I would blog about things that I struggle with or the thing that I'm learning at the time. The two reasons that hold me back are A, what if I make mistakes, be it in code samples or in the writing, or B, whatever I write about would already have been covered in a more popular blog. So what's the point of repeating myself? And lastly, slightly unrelated, would you recommend hosting a blog with Jekyll GitHub or a standard WordPress blog?
Okay. So first of all, Relly is like, I'm worried about starting to blog because mistakes. So let's address that one first. Is that I feel like that's pretty real. People talk about that all the time, that they're just worried that they'll say something about design that's wrong. Or you blog, Sophie. What do you think?
Well, the really good thing about blogs is you can always delete stuff. So you're not like sending out a newsletter that people will put in their scrapbook. But I think also everyone is going to write stuff. Like, this is not a slam on you, Chris, but web is changing so fast that even stuff you've posted you know, 2 years ago is now totally out of date, and you would not recommend certain techniques you talked about.
Certainly.
Anymore. So I think as long as you're not presenting yourself as like, I am the expert of everything, then it's unavoidable.
Sure.
There are going to be mistakes.
And there's dates on stuff, so...
Yeah,
that's good. And you can update stuff because, like you said, it's not something that is being clipped out and put in your box of things to save.
Exactly.
This is your next resume for your job.
Unless your mom prints your posts.
If you're really worried about backlash, just don't put any comments on there. That's a way to kind of stay away from getting slammed for it too. And there's no reason that you have to. I don't think, because, you know, and not that I should perpetuate the myth that you should be really worried about what you're going to write, but I do feel like this is just my general feeling of the way things are right now on the web. Is there's a lot of that. There's a lot of just pundits on the internet just looking to just chime in about anything, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of pundits. I think they really do want to chime in.
Damn it, Dave. So if, you know, like, don't worry about them too much. But, you know, if you want to just avoid that entirely, force somebody to, you know, you want to. I've always wanted to do this on some sites, but I like comments too much. Like, I still hold on to the quality of them. But it's kind of tempting to be like, you know what? You want to say something about this? You start a blog, write a blog post that's a response for that. That not only is that like a stronger sentiment, like if you really have something to say, then say it. It's also like it's fun. The cross blogging days. You gotta bring that stuff back.
Track back.
Yeah. Mm.
Ping back, track back. There was somebody trying to bring ping backs back.
I feel like Jeremy Keith's always trying to hold on to it.
Oh, man. So good.
Anyway, that's something. What about other reasons to blog? I mean, I just feel like, you know, Sophie's, if anybody wants to find out about you, Sophie, they're going to look at your Twitter and they're going to for sure find your blog, right? Isn't that kind of a reason to blog?
I like looking back on things that I've written. Like, I like doing it for me, not even necessarily for other people, because I think there are a lot of blogs out there that are really good that I'm not contributing that much. But I like going back and thinking like, okay, yeah, that was an interesting experience, or that's when I learned how to do this thing.
Mm-hmm. It puts a date on it and like a stamp of the feeling you had at that time or whatever.
Exactly, yeah. Mm.
It's a nice sentiment. For you, Relly, you absolutely should. You got into technical stuff a little bit. Certainly, if you're just in it because that, you know, that timestamp idea feels good to you or whatever, starting a blog can take about 10 seconds these days if you don't care about where and how you do it or whatever. You certainly can go to WordPress.com or anything like that and start one. But it sounds like you're kind of interested in the tech stuff behind it too. So certainly, you know, WordPress.org and self-hosting is a thing there. But there's of course there's a million ways to do it. Dave uses GitHub Pages and Jekyll, right? Or do you have actuals?
I self-host.
You almost shouldn't.
I almost shouldn't. I'm probably doing myself a disservice. But yeah, I would say if the GitHub Jekyll stuff, that's going to teach you a lot of skills like version control and how to manage Ruby gems and stuff like that. If that interests you, I would do that in like compiling out a site versus WordPress, which is more on the CMS end. Like now you're dealing with databases and scaling and stuff like that. So if that stuff interests you, I would do it WordPress. And another cool thing about WordPress, and Jekyll can do this too, but if you start like with a free blog on WordPress.com, if blogging is more important to you, you can be up on WordPress in microseconds. So it's kind of that priority. Is learning important to you, like getting kind of command liney, or is just doing like just blogging important? And then so that's what I would choose. That's how I would make my decision.
And of course, there's a million alternatives to all this stuff that we're mentioning. It's just these are the big names, and that's just what we say for stuff. What do you use, Sophie? What is that? What is Sophie Shepherd?
I have it's on Jekyll. So I liked that because I had never used it before. And it was like right around when I was kind of learning SAS and doing, you know, from my designer's perspective, more command line stuff. So I thought it was awesome to figure out how to build that. I think if I had done it like 2 or 3 years ago, I would have been really confused.
Nice. Yeah. I love
I'm happy with it.
Freckles, a good thing. Let's see. Do you have that audio one up, Dave?
Oh, I sure do. It's from Dennis Pipper, or Piper. Hopefully I said that correctly.
It's Pipper, because see the thing.
Hey, guys, I'm Dennis. I teach web design and development at a community college in Michigan, and we have a special topics class that allows us to teach just about anything. And this spring semester, I have a class on emerging web technologies. Now, I'm wondering what sort of topics should be discussed in a class like this. Also, the class that students take before this is a course in Web Design 1, which teaches HTML and CSS using a text editor. The Web Design 2 class that they take after that is a JavaScript jQuery class in a text editor. We also teach PHP MySQL.
Well done.
And we also teach them WordPress installations and usage. But we don't teach a lot of design-specific topics. It is infused into all the classes, and our academic program is more technical in nature.
So,
well done, by the way. That might be the most well-recorded, rehearsed, presented question ever.
That is great. So Dennis teaches at a community college in Michigan. Sounds like they're at the top of the game, and they've got Web Design 1, 2, 3 classes. So what sort of topics should be discussed in an emerging web technologies class? I like this.
I don't know. What would you teach if you are tasked with Web Design 101?
I think SaaS.
Yeah, you just go right at it.
Yeah, because I think anyone, like, actually, where most people working in web development are doing that these days.
Mm-hmm.
I'd probably teach, I think, a lot of, like, you can learn what HTML is and what CSS is, but you could get into more theoretical stuff of structuring and how to work it and, like, pattern library type stuff. I think learning that helps you then go back and understand how CSS works and how SAS works.
That's kind of nice. That's the theory that's kind of like jump ahead a little bit, because it's like mm-hmm. a little bit more functional and fun and productive perhaps. And then you can learn the underlying stuff later because you are doing the underlying stuff without knowing it, kind of. I at least that's what I took out of it. That's kind of my jQuery. That's the classic one there. You know, it's like, should I learn jQuery first or JavaScript first? And of course, there'll always be two schools of thought on that. It's like, learn the fundamentals first and then use an abstraction, or use the abstraction first because it's more productive, and then go back and learn. And there's like never any good solution to that. It's just people.
I would guess that people want whatever they did. Like, I'm like, yeah, learn CSS first and then SAS. But
that's
then I have talked to people who know SAS, you know, and learn that with CSS built into it as part of it, and they think that's way easier. So
very cool. So I think what Dennis is asking here is, so that's, you know, we already know that he teaches HTML and CSS and Web Design 1 and JavaScript and jQuery and 2, but he's teaching a new class, or a special topics class, that allows him to teach whatever he wants. So because those ones already exist, this is in addition to that. So I wonder if we have any advice for him for what should be the topic of that class. What do you think, Dave? You got a, like, emerging web technology.
It's tough. I mean, you've got like I feel like SAS is a great gateway to, you know, build steps and stuff like that, which could be a gateway to Grunt and Gulp and all
tooling.
These kind of task runner kind of tools. I mean, those may not be around by the time your students graduate. So that's something to consider. But
that's the difficult thing with this, because, like, it seems I probably start new projects maybe every 3 months. And every time I start something, the developers will be like, okay, we're going to use this. And now I have to learn a new thing. So I feel like teaching a university would be so difficult.
I think it might be cool to do something, you know, I don't know what you'd want to do, but maybe like I'm picturing like a tour of the world, like a tour of languages, where you just kind of like kind of show like a for loop or something in every language, and just kind of be like, these are purely a stylistic choice. Whatever feels good to you is probably the best thing for you. And maybe even kind of databases, like, here's a database. It looks like a spreadsheet when you think about it, but then sometimes they're just a big flat file, which is just a tree of information. Those are your two choices. Choose one. Which one do you like? You know, that might be kind of like way too deep, but I feel like you could do like a very, I don't know, junior overview of how there are different technologies. So,
and then you learn more about the concepts too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Rather than the actual, like, cause you know, certain things kind of do the same thing. There's just right. newer, different, better ways of doing it.
That's right. True.
And then maybe you could do templating would be a big thing. You know, they're getting into WordPress, which is a great example, but explain the idea that like, hey, you, if you write it once, that's better than writing it 1500 times. So, like, you know, kind of the big, I guess that's not an emergent, like dry is not an emerging web technology, but, kind of is, but no, you know, command line tools, if you think you're into it, but that may also just like shoot over people's heads. There are GUI abstractions for that. I think somebody in the chat room was saying text editor, like how, like, yeah, Dennis was.
Yeah, that's good. It's saying, HTML, like, CSS, dev tools, which is a huge part of this that we shouldn't ignore. A text editor, and then how to start up a local server, which is nice too, because it, all those things aren't all that particularly complicated and do add up to a pretty nice looking 101 class, if you ask me.
Mm-hmm. Those are things too that are like, until I started having to do them in the real world, I never really understood how to do it.
Yeah, nice.
I've seen like hack school sort of thing in college, they kind of like have a portfolio project or something they do, but man, I mean, maybe it's just something like just go crazy on a code pen or something, like here's WebGL. Good
yeah,
luck.
Emerging web technologies. How to use CodePen. I'll take that. Yeah. SVG, I would do vote I get, for just because that's not a part of it.
What's my kickback royalty rate?
We might have to set something like that right. up. But you know, watch right. Monday. Remember, folks, that's a big day for CodePen.
Ooh, coming up. Hey. Ooh,
okay. Do you have some, hopefully, so ideas for you, Dennis, for your emerging technologies class, just to put a point on it, would be like, you're not teaching pre-processing yet, so maybe that could be a thing. Some kind of tooling, maybe some kind of MVC kind of thing, maybe SVG. Those are some ideas for you. How about that?
Yep. All right. Okay. Next question comes from David Sturgeon. Writes in, when dealing with overlays, do you prefer to have them centered on the screen or offset from the top? I could see benefits of both, but it seems when it is centered on the screen, it becomes your primary focus. If it is stuck to the top, then the close button is usually positioned off to the top left, will not be cut off. What are your thoughts? So talking specifically about like a modal,
I guess, right? Like,
yeah, like your sign in modal or something. And should it anchor kind of to the top or should it be in the middle of the screen? So
I don't think there's a right answer. I think it depends on your design.
Well, one of the right answers is don't cut modal. Off. For sure. There you go. But he's saying that the close button doesn't get cut off. That's a must have. You know, if one of the ways that you need to close this modal is through the close button, no matter which one of these you use, make sure that doesn't get cut off. I mean, that's not an acceptable outcome. So I don't know that where you position it, though, has to, I think you probably have something very specific in mind that was that kind of thing. Or he's saying he's using that centering technique where you translate it with CSS -50%, -50% from top left 50%, you know. So it does that, like it puts it in the middle no matter what size it is. You don't need to know how big it is, which is a really nice CSS technique. But the thing is, it, you know, like if the modal happens to be taller than the screen is, it could go over, you know, it would be happy to translate itself above the top of the screen, I guess. So you'd need to make sure that your modal never does that, I guess. That's pretty reasonable. Whereas if you just said fixed position top 100 pixels, this is example here, it can never do that. It will always be under the top of the browser window. That's just tech stuff, you know. Definitely make sure that that doesn't happen.
The trick I like to do is use media queries, and on mobile, it's at the top for sure, and it can scroll if it's taller than the height of the screen. That's important now. And then it goes wider And then it kind of centers, or it's like a, you know, like a percentage, like a 20% off the top or something. So it kind of grows with the browser as it goes. That's Think nice. About that.
Yeah. It's so definitely media queries should be involved here because mobile is going to be your hardest thing. Assuming that we've already broken Sophie's rule of don't use modal.
Yeah.
I think fixed positioning is usually frowned upon on mobile, but then is like it's too bad because it actually is kind of nice on mobile because I often worry about using position absolute, but position absolute, like if you're scrolled way down the page and you say, you know, position absolute top 100 pixels, it's way gone. You can't see nothing, you know, and that's no good.
Yeah.
Not that you can't scroll on desktop too, but you know what I mean? It's like it feels like you scroll more on mobile.
This is maybe Sophie has experiences similar, but when I browse the web, like on my phone or my tablet or whatever, like whenever there's a modal or some kind of carousel, and I know we hate on carousels as a web culture. I'm not like, that's not the argument I'm digging up, but do you ever, that's where it gets that like iffy feeling, right? It's like, you're like, oh, it opened up something. The screen went dark. Oh God, everything's going to crash.
Is that Rupert?
Yeah, it's getting kind of Rupert-y, and you just kind of wonder.
Something's wrong, you don't know what.
Yeah, and so I guess that's I don't know, is that what's going on? Have you experienced that more? That's what I'm feeling. Like, so I kind of wish we depended less on these overlay tricks. But.
Yeah, I think there's usually ways of working around them. And I think that there's often troubles you run into, and it's not really worth trying to make it work from a design perspective.
Yeah,
like they're not necessary enough.
There's you know, the definition of modal, as far as I understand it, isn't just it's not an alternative to a dialogue box or just a way to present information. Modal means you stop doing anything else until you deal with this. It's like a stop thing. So if you're just trying to display a little bit of information, don't use a modal for a sign up or something like that. That's not a mutually exclusive action. The reason I try to use mobiles is modals is like when you're going to delete a pen on CodePen. We force you to, a modal opens up. You can do nothing else but deal with this modal, and you have to, you know, choose that this is an action that can't be reversed and all that type of stuff. So if somebody writes in and says, my pen is gone, like there's only one way to get rid of a pen, and it's through this modal that's super dangerous looking. So I feel like, and we never get that. We never get support requests that are largely due to modals, I think. So I think of anytime you use a modal, is my goal to stop them from doing anything else until this is dealt with, and if the answer is no, then don't do it. Perhaps.
I agree with that. I think it's an edge case, though. Mm-hmm. Like, as you said, a sign-up form, probably don't need it.
Yeah.
An image, probably don't need it.
Good thoughts.
All right, sponsor. We got a sponsor here, CodePen. Yeah.
It's kind of a last-minute thing here. We only have one sponsor this week, so I was like, let's do this thing. Yeah, it's pronounced CodePen.
CodePen. It's North Korean. Oy,
here's a lot of you know about it because it's my thing that I do with Tim Sabat and Alex Vasquez, and we have our podcast too. So if you can't get enough podcasts, we have blog.codepen.io/radio, CodePen Radio, where we talk about different topics of what it's like running a web software business. We do this full time. It is a thing that is our kind of our full time job. I guess it's a startup, although that, you know. I don't know. I guess there's nothing wrong with the word startup, but it just feels like we're a little scrappy little startup just trying to make our way through the world. Ugh. That's not how I think of it, really. It's just a small business, really. Anyway, there's things that CodePen can do in which that makes it a business, right? Like you can just go and use CodePen pen for free, and that's fine. And I don't, you're more than welcome to do that for the rest of your life. But there are features that we try and compel you with to sign up for a paid plan. Some of those are like a drag and drop uploading of assets. If you're going to build a pen and it needs an image in it, you can just click, if you're a pro, you can just open up the little assets pop up, drag an image onto it. It just Ajaxes it up to Amazon S3, gives you a URL for it. You can use it in the pens that you build. You just get that really nice, easy experience of hosting assets if you're pro. You get collab mode, which is like this, I give you a URL and now we're both typing like at the same time, like in Google Docs where you get the multiple cursors thing. That can happen on CodePen too if you're pro through collab mode. And then similarly, professor mode is I'm going to type and I'll give this URL to as many people as you want for effectively. And you watch me type. So I'm a professor and you are watching me. We have big plans for all this stuff. It's going to get better. But all that stuff works now. It's gone through lots of iterations. It's pretty solid tech for those things. And there's a lot more features too. I'm not going to rattle off every single pro feature, but the idea is that we compel you to upgrade to that if you need, and those things work for you. So, sponsored by CodePen, check out Monday. We have a little, speaking of running a small business, our feature is related to that. That will be launching Monday. So, I was thinking about launching it right now and telling all you guys listening live to just please be quiet about it, but it's just not quite ready for you to even see yet. So, we'll just wait till Monday.
The favorite part about this sponsor is they also have a podcast called CodePen Radio. Uh-huh. It's super good. It's kind of the story of a startup.
Not a
being
startup.
Born.
Yeah.
Not a startup.
Don't call it a startup.
A bootstrap
Don't
being
call
born.
It.
Don't call it a startup.
It's a little
if
business.
If you can't get enough of me cutting off Dave... You can listen to me cut off Tim and Alex.
It's one of my favorite podcasts. It's just cool to see how things grow and stuff like that. There's an episode on scaling, like how do you go from one box to 20 and not like just burn in flames. It's cool stuff that like maybe you're not at, but man, if you whatever hit make the right website, you might be there in a couple months, you know? So it's cool.
So Sophie is
and your transparency about everything's really good. Anyway, let's go. Hey, here we go. Ferdy's lettering writes in, the company where I work wants to set steps towards research and development. Many big tech companies like Google and Facebook are using the 20% rule for R&D, which allow employees to work on their own projects. I know this isn't realistic for smaller agencies, but I think companies should be spending time on R&D. My question is, what's your experience opinion with R&D within companies, and should everyone have... or everyone has their own project, for example, how Grunt fits into the company workflow, or should we be using Travis CI or something of that sort?
That got weird at the end. Well, oh, like, no, it's a, I see. It's a,
like a side project for
just an example of some R&D.
Yeah.
Yeah. For example, that's why it was prefaced with that. Got it.
Yeah.
Do you do R&D? Do you have some time to work on internal projects or do you whatever you want at Happy Cog, Sophie? Or is that concept different?
Yeah, we do. It's recently, like probably 6 months ago, maybe a little more, we tried to formalize it. And we did these things called Fix It Fridays. So we used part of Fridays, I think it was usually like the second half of the day, or if you didn't have other stuff to do the whole day for internal projects. And nice. It could be anything from like, you know, fixing the speed of our website, or like one day I went to Specs, which is like a local beer and fancy cheese store, and bought a bunch of snacks for the office. So it's anything that's like bettering the company in some way, or it can be research or learning or whatever. But it got really difficult because it had to be, I don't know, we always had client work that took over. And of course, you're not going to push that aside to do this optional work. So right. I think the trick to it is it has to be super formal. It was also really easy on a Friday, you know, at 3 o'clock to kind of wind down and not put
full effort into something. So I think it's an awesome idea. It needs to be formal for it to work, especially with client work where, you know, we always have deadlines coming up and work that needs to be done.
Yeah. Okay. So it's kind of like not only formal, but forced perhaps, like,
I don't know. Force takes the fun out of it.
Okay.
I think for us, it was hard to like step away from client work and to put that aside and not work on that.
Yeah. So it's probably maybe even easier at somewhere like Google, where I'm sure they have timelines and stuff, but it's so big, you know, that it's like, if I don't work on this, you know, this other thing that I'm doing, that might even be R&D feeling anyway, to do other R&D, that's probably easier
and
to
I
do.
And I think some of those companies, big companies, have kind of backed off of that 20% thing. I don't know for sure. I don't work there, but I've heard that they've kind of been backing away from that. But there are companies like GitHub has a structure, you know, it's like a sprint based thing where it's like, if you want to work on something for one sprint, you like self-organize and hammer on it. So that might be something for your company too, is just like, you just say, hey, like me and three other people are, you know, we're kind of mid project and don't have anything to do. So we need, how about we just whatever, move everything over to Travis CI or something like that, or experiment with that. And we'll come back with a report, you know, in 2 weeks. That might be an option for you guys.
I think with client work, we ended up like working it into the work we were already having to do. So we would try new stuff. It may work or it may not. And that's just all part of research and development.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't have like dedicated time to do it.
Right. I actually dedicate a percentage of my time to R&D. It's 100%. 100% of my time is that.
The holistic approach.
Yeah, that's how I roll.
That's it too. Is it like, it's a lot of effort to like stay bleeding edge and knowledgeable and stuff like that. But I mean, it might be worth it to kind of always, you know, at least know how to hello world things.
I know you're really good at that. Dave's always up.
I try.
Dave's always hello worlding.
We've been in the situation just like where the contract sorted out, like kind of had a free, like a Friday to like work on things, side project Friday kind of thing. And it's been good, but it's also been hard to like find a balance and on a more personal level with family and stuff like that. Like, you know, family sees time. I'm like, and I want to hang out with my family. So it just sort of like fell into that. But at the same, you know, on the same token, like I've learned how to phone gap apps and roll those out, 'cause I'm building an app out with my brother. I've learned how to like, I built databases and stuff for it too. And you know that, so that stuff's happened. I got to clean up issues on open source projects, which are lingering. I have 14 pull requests on one site, so don't, no more pull requests, please. And yeah, so that's kind of like, sometimes when you get that free time, it's just you clean out your inbox. I mean, like, you know, which kind of counts as work, but I don't know. Like there was one Friday I went in and I was like, yeah, I just like deleted all, I got to inbox zero from like 300. And my wife was like, that's what you did? Well, I was like taking care of our kid. I was like, I'm sorry, but it was really necessary. But yeah, so that's something to consider too, is like, how good are you and your team at self time management?
Nice.
Well, do we got time for one more? Sophie, are you good?
I'm good.
All right, here we go. Derek Hughes writes in. So I work at an agency that is pretty fast paced, as in every project is the top priority. I mainly work with WordPress and I create custom themes using a Bootstrap grid. I can develop roughly quickly, completing a site in 3 to 5 days, truly responsive as well, and not based on 3 breakpoints. That's pretty good. My other coworker, whom isn't as tech savvy, uses the same WordPress theme for all projects, which I feel degrades the work, but he gets praise for his quick turnaround time. Should I sacrifice my opportunity to grow and learn and follow suit for job security, or perhaps start looking somewhere else? Is this a new business trend, quantity over quality? Thanks.
It's a
big question.
It is. And I like that you're the slow. You complete sites in 3 days and you're the slow one.
That's pretty fast from my point of view.
Yeah, I'm sure it is from Sophie's point of view too. I won't speak for you, but yeah, we don't usually turn around sites in 3 days. I can see, you know, that's the style of business that you're in. That's how you've positioned yourself. That's the clients that you're after, probably, whether you know it or not, or, you know, because probably largely based on your price point, wouldn't you think?
Yeah. It's probably like they're selling, you know, sites for sub, like whatever market rate. And therefore, in order to be profitable and to pay you guys for hours and to pay the sales guys and to pay the CEO of your company, you have to finish it really fast, you know? So the guy who finishes the site in 1 day using this like same theme that he just changes a few colors on, is making your company more money than you who are like building out a whole site in 3 days. So, I don't know. I mean, I personally would probably be in your shoes where I like want to take the time and craft the site, but you know, maybe that's not the business that your company is doing. So, that's something to think about. You know, could you feel work satisfaction by doing the one theme thing? I don't know.
It doesn't sound like it.
But you would get
it doesn't sound
based on his tone.
He's interested in running a business that turns some pixels into money, probably. Right? I mean, I guess that feels rude to say, kind of. But I don't know that it's a pretty specific client service to be just like, what do you got? You got an Italian restaurant? I'll take it. I'm going to put some lasagna up here in the header. Here you go. Who's next? You know?
Yeah, the deli style web shop.
Would you do it? Let's say it turned out to be highly profitable, Sophie. Would you open a 3-day turnaround design business, or is it just not for you? Or
I'd probably get burnt out really fast.
That's what you think?
I'm kind of bored. Like, I like the taking time to do something right.
Yeah, it just fits your personality better.
If it was a lot of money, though.
Yeah, it's hard to think. You know, I see, you know, once in a while I hear somebody like, yeah, I quit my job, started selling WordPress themes, and now I got a house in Beverly Hills kind of thing. I'm like, I could make WordPress themes.
I think for this guy, it sounds like that's not what he's into.
The actual question, I guess, was, should I sacrifice my opportunity to grow and learn and follow suit for job security, meaning I should start turning these things even faster, or should I start looking elsewhere, meaning I guess do something else? Or
I would look elsewhere.
There you go.
Because by learning and growing, then he'll have more job security in the future.
That's a good sentiment. Yeah.
Yeah, because if like bootstrap sites fall out of trend, what do you do? You know, or WordPress theme sites, or let's say you switch stacks or something. Well, you know, what do you do? What do you do?
If you become an excellent designer and developer and client services person, you will be useful forever, as I like to say. So that seems like the clean way to approach this. Derek, best of luck with your business, no matter what.
There's lots of companies that would love to hire you. On that note, Sophie, thank you for coming on the show.
Thank
so
you
much.
For
those who aren't following you, giving you money, how can they do that? And then what's one big thing you'd like to plug before you go?
No one needs to give me money. And my Twitter is Soap Shepherd. I don't post a whole lot of valuable web content, but I got some good dad jokes. And then I blog on soapshepherd.com, which is slightly more valuable web content.
Perfect. All right. Thank you very much. And thanks, everyone, for listening and tuning in to the Shop Talk Show. We really appreciate it. Be sure to rate us up in your podcatcher of choice. And shout out to the Pocket Cast guys who helped us out with a jam this week. So the top-notch podcatcher there. Thanks everyone for listening. Be sure to check out the website. Go to the website. And Monday. And Chris, you got anything else?
You went on repeat there, Captain Vinyl.
Monday.
ShopDocShow.com.